not had a talk last night.
No, okay. So anyway, we are just at the beginning.
Yeah.
And it's very funny that we talk about suffering so early in the year. You're still relaxed and you're still having a good time from your vacations, holidays, or whatever you're doing. And we got to start talking about suffering. Actually, a lot of criticisms I got from a lot of people who do not understand Buddhism or from other religions is that, you know, why you Buddhists are so pessimistic? You talk about suffering all the time. You look at us, we are so happy. We clap our hands, we have music, we do dancing and all this. We're so happy. So, I mean, these sort of things, when you look at it, it's because people don't understand what suffering is. If you look at the dictionary, it tells you a lot of things about suffering. And even within ourselves, when we think of suffering, we are thinking of something which is, you know, big. When you get knocked down by a car and then you break your leg, that is suffering. Okay, that's one of them. When you fall sick and then somebody tells you you got cancer and then, you know, you're going to die in 6 months' time, that is suffering. And maybe sometimes your boyfriend or girlfriend leaves you, and you feel that's suffering also when you feel that. Or maybe failing exams is another form of suffering. And you go, as you go on, you can see, you know, just reduce the thing. Actually, we look at it, when these people ask me, you know, why Buddhists suffer and they don't suffer, I ask them, what happens when you are looking for something and you can't get it? Then he thinks over and says, but that's not suffering. That is suffering. Now, when the Buddhists talk about suffering, it's talking about all this sort of thing, big and small. So generally, when we talk about suffering in Buddhism, or the Buddha's teaching, it has got to be the physical one, like being born. You guys think being born is no suffering, but if you look at a baby, when you're being pulled up from the mother's womb, and it's out so comfortable inside there, right, living in water and all these things, all of a sudden the baby get pulled out and there's big shock there, air. You've got to start breathing air, and then there's no more beautiful, comforting cushion in the mother's uterus. That is suffering. Even though the baby knows nothing, but that physical feeling, that is suffering. So one of the first things the Buddha said is, well, birth is suffering. And what happens when you are born? At the other end of it, we are going to die. Death is inevitable. Look at history everywhere, unless, you know, in mythology people don't die. But you look at reality, everybody dies. I'm going to die, you're going to die. You've seen dead people, you know, your grandfather has died. Maybe if you're still alive, they'll be dead sometime. So all of us will die. Nobody escaped from suffering. And the mere thing you're going to die, now it, for you young guys, you know, it's not so bad. For me, I'm thinking, you know, what I'm going to do, and I'm just in my deathbed, trying to die. It's not easy to die. For you, those of you who study medicine or doing nursing and all this, you can see people are struggling when they're dying. But the more important is that fear that comes out of dying. People say, oh, okay, when the times come, I kill myself. It's not that easy either. You've got to get yourself really well prepared for it. So death is suffering. Now, between being born and dying, there are certain other physical things which you've got to go through. One thing is, you're going to grow older. Going to age. When you are young, you like to grow old. When you are 5 years old, you like to pretend you are 14 years old, don't you? And when you are 14 years old, you try to pretend you are 20 years old, possibly. And try to go into pubs, you know, using false identification and all this. And when you are 20 years old, you try to pretend you are 25, possibly. But you come to 25, 26, then you start to worry about it. And when you're 25, 26, people say, oh, you look 30, how do you feel? as you go on. Then when you reach 40, you start to say, I'm now starting to be middle-aged. Right? That's aging. As it goes on, you feel more and more stress about it. Especially in our society, this society here, where we stress on youth, right? Young. Everything's got to be young. So, young meaning you're supposed to be strong, muscular, either pretty or handsome or whatever. But when you start to get old, you start to look at the mirror, and then wrinkles coming up, and then the teeth getting longer. And then as you get more and more advanced in the age, you find that now I can't really climb the rock anymore. I used to be able to do, rock climbing. Now I can't climb the rocks anymore. And then there is this feeling of disappointment in you. And that is suffering. So Buddha said, birth is suffering, aging is suffering, death is suffering. Then the other suffering which you can see quite easily is between, well, as we age, right, as we grow older, as we live, there are a lot of sufferings which we get from a thing called sickness or illness. None of us are perfectly healthy. Just I take a census. How many of you have never seen a doctor or never been sick before? See, I proved my point. Everybody must be sick. But depends on what sickness you get. Some people are unlucky, they get horrible sickness. Some people are lucky, they get small little sickness. A toothache is a sickness, it's an illness. Breaking a leg is a illness. So all these things, when you are being taken over by all these incapabilities or whatever, then it's suffering. Nobody likes to fall sick, except when you want to bludge classes. I remember in school we used to say, oh, I got flu today. And my children used to do that. And now my grandson, grandpa, I can't go to school today. Sniff, sniff, I got cold. But actually we consider, these are all the pretend sickness. But the real sickness within us make us suffer. You've got things like backache or whatever. So, again, this is sickness is suffering, as the Buddha has said. And these are all the physical things which we can see. You can see the thing. These are what we call the four physical suffering. But on top of that, there are other sufferings which are not so much of a physical nature. Although the physical nature might sometimes affect it. And that is to do with our mental side of suffering. Buddha also said there are certain occasions when certain times when you have got to be with things which you don't like, or with situations you don't like, or with people you don't like. You can't avoid that sometimes. Life don't go easily. You're not plain sailing for us all the time. That's nature. Things change. When you sit down comfortably, what happens? I tell you, sit down comfortably. I'm going to see how long you're going to last in a comfortable posture. I'm quite sure after 10 minutes, 15, 20 minutes, or half an hour, you feel uncomfortable and wanting to move. And that itself is the beginning, the little suffering which we are experiencing. Or sometimes the bigger ones which you can feel is to be with people you don't like. Sometimes people, I don't like that guy, but I still got to work with him sometimes. I still got to meet him, and so on. So, and I don't like a situation where I don't like, and I still got to be in the situation. And that is suffering. On the other hand, we got situation which we like very, very much. And we still got to be away from it. I like to be comfortable. In the morning, I like to sleep. And again, look at the alarm clock. Look at not the alarm clock. Look at the clock. It goes 6 o'clock. I wake up. I still got 1 hour more to go to sleep. So 7 o'clock. I wake up. I would like to sleep for another hour, but I still got to go up, get up and work. Or for you guys, go out and attend your uni lectures. So that is the sort of things. When you feel you get yourself up, that's not a situation which you want or you like, but you have got to be in a situation that is suffering. Or maybe, a lot of people, they fall in love, so-called. Right? So they want to be with the lover all the time. You know? That's, you know, a lot of young people do that. You know? They go walking hand in hand and so on and so forth. You know? I've seen that many, many times. So, but they still got to leave the person. You see, even though you stay in the same flat, you sleep in the same bed and all these things, but you still got to go, that the other guy got to go to the toilet. So if all that, the 15 minutes people attend toilets, that's separation. Separation from people you like. Separation from things you like. Separation from situations you like. And sometimes you get a nice food, a nice banquet and everything, but you can't get whatever you want. You eat a lot and still want some more, but there's no more left. So that is the sort of things we got to be aware of. And that, the Buddha said, is suffering. So far we have listed 6 sufferings already. Birth, aging, sickness, death, be with things we don't like, separating from things which we like, and situations. And of course, the 7th is not always getting what we want. It's not always, but not getting what we want. Because we got this appetite for things. You wish for something, and you get something, you're happy, right? I'm quite sure you do. Then after that, what happens? I want some more of it. I want it to last longer. Right? These are the sort of things you get. So your happiness becomes suffering. So when people tell me they are very extremely happy, I say, okay, look into it. What happens the last time you were very happy? How long did it last? And this sort of things goes on and on in life. It's everyday occurrence. You get things. It's either when in the morning, for people like me, you know, when you get to this age, you look in the mirror, you look at the wrinkles and all these things, you say, oh, it's aging. Then the next time, it's just, maybe the next moment you get a headache, that's suffering. Or maybe, you know, you twist a leg, it's suffering. Then, of course, I finished my birth suffering, I'm waiting for my death suffering, and I know that it's coming. Then, when you go out, there's a lot of things which makes you suffer. In the morning, you wake up, beautiful weather. And those of you who attend my previous talks, you know that. That's my favorite story. But, you know, perfect weather, autumn. You're very comfortable in your bed. Open your eyes, it's a beautiful day, a beautiful morning. Then the next thing is, I got to attend uni. So, see, your happiness just goes down. Then you smell some beautiful smell coming from the kitchen. Somebody's making a toast, making bacon and all this. Maybe your flatmate, maybe your mom or your sister or brother. You go downstairs, hoping that they cook you the bacon. Then all of a sudden they tell you, cook your own. See? Up, down, up, down. Right? Then whatever it is, you know, you have your shower and all this, maybe you get in the shower hoping to get a nice warm shower. Somebody, before you use up all hot water, you got to shower in cold water. Again. Then when you go out, there's a queue in the bus stand. Okay? Okay, assuming that you try to go forward and be a smart guy, then just beat the queue, go up there and you got to the bus and got a seat, happy. But all of a sudden the bus stops somewhere and you get a puncture of a tire or something like that, got to get down. Okay. So that's the sort of things we go every day. And generally you look at it, there's not too many times when we are really, really happy. Even when we are happy, it doesn't last very long in this sort of happiness. So it's right that when the Buddha is trying to tell us the truth, he says, life is suffering. For many of us, we prefer not to look at the suffering because we try to deny it. There are a lot of denials going on in life. Not suffering. I'm not suffering. I'm not suffering. But the truth is, everybody is suffering. You, me, and everybody is included. And when the Buddha said this, People look at it from the superficial level. They say, ah, you Buddhists are very pessimistic. Why not you go and kill yourself and get rid of all this suffering? But it's not easy to kill yourself because of our attachment to life. So the other alternative is to let us do something about this suffering. Sitting down and deny the suffering is not the way, because eventually the whole truth will come to you. So the first thing for any Buddhist to do is to acknowledge this suffering. We know that this is suffering, but what are we going to do about it? So that's where the Buddha's teaching comes in, and where we cannot consider the teachings to be pessimistic, because it gives us a way out. It says, okay, the way to look at it is, where does all this suffering come from? And for those deniers, people who deny suffering, says, oh, it's nothing to do with me. Some big authority up there makes me suffer. They tell you, okay, the big spirit up there make you suffer so that you can test you, so that when you finish your suffering, you can go to heaven and you can enjoy everything. But that's a very big question there. Why should that fella make you suffer so that you can enjoy yourself later? Isn't it? If the fella really, you know, nice, likes you very much, he should give you all the happiness and all the enjoyment now, rather than for you to suffer and go to the next life and enjoy yourself. So you find that in many cases, you know, they tell you, in this life, you know, you must not do this, you must not do that. In the next life, you can do everything. That's your happiness. So we don't subscribe to the theory, because we think, am I subject to manipulation by higher authority? Then the Buddha is a very independent soul. Look at it and say, no, all these things are all people's imagination. You, me, we are responsible for our own suffering. So it brings the dignity back to the person, that you are not being run like a puppet by somebody else. So how did the Buddha explain it then? Okay, he says, look at the suffering. There is a thing called your mind. So when this mind works a certain way, you get the suffering. And for us, that is the regular way which the mind works. It's like that all the time. To put it simply, the Buddha says, this mind of ours makes us want to get attached to things, and therefore we get suffering. And everybody has got a mind. You know you have got a mind, I have got a mind. But where the mind is, we don't know. We have got one. Is it up here? Is it up here? Is it here? We don't know. But you know that the mind works. Of course, the Buddhists, you know, when you go further on in your study on Buddhism, you find that we talk about the mind being a process rather than a thing there to happen. But anyway, just for the sake of making it short, I'll say that there's such a thing as a mind. The mind works. And when the mind works, we get stuck onto things and therefore we suffer. So I want to elaborate further about that. Now, how does it happen? You see, for us, the basic unit is me or you. Don't look at anybody else. And when we have got this body, there's this mind, and the mind happens when we come in contact with certain things. When we look at something, right? When there's this looking or this sight, then the brain starts to work. The way it works is, when you look at it, there is a certain feelings in it, sensation in it. When I look this cup, there's a certain sensation I see. But what happens after that is, again, the mind starts to recognize the thing. It's looking at it, it says it's a cup. Why I say it's a cup? Because when I was very young, everybody tells me it's a cup. I can't call this a bowl, can I? It's a cup. So it's stuck to this mind. So I recognize this as a cup. This one is a table. That one is a Buddha image. Right? For anybody who hasn't seen a Buddha image, they say, what is that thing? Right? So we start to recognize the thing. Have an impression of the thing and start to know what it is. So when I see this cup, it's just not only see, I see the cup. I see the cup also as a porcelain cup. It's a white porcelain cup with this sort of designs. And all this happened because my mind starts to work. It keeps on piling information and data on it. Then after that I say, the next thing. I think this cup is very pretty. You see, this is how the mind starts to work step by step. But sometimes it goes, we think that it goes in one go. But it's like that. This cup is very pretty. I would like to have this cup. You see that? Starting from my eyes coming into contact with it, I already start to develop these ideas. I want to have this cup. The reason why I want to have this cup is it's very pretty. I want to own it. This is slowly coming in. And when I want to own it, what do I do? I ask Alan for this cup. Alan, can you spare me this cup? If Alan gave me the cup, I said, thank you very much. I put it in my pocket, I go. And then maybe after that, when I go home, I say, I shouldn't ask for one cup, I should ask for two cups. It's the way your mind works. Or on the other hand, when Alan says, no, we are, that's only our only cup here. Then what do I do next? Because my desire to own the cup is so strong, I wait for everybody to go, I put the cup in my pocket and walk away. So I start to steal, I stole the cup. So this is the way it is. Of course, when you start stealing, I start stealing the cup, then what happens? The suffering comes in. Because I know that I took the cup without people's permission. And then if they find out, then next time they won't invite me to give a talk in Winnipeg anymore. That Jim is a bloody thief. So this is the way it is. And we're so scared. And then after that, what should I do? I'll be having this anxiety for a few days. Shall I return the cup or not? Shall I not return the cup? No. Just a simple thing. I started with looking at the cup and all this subsequent suffering I've got to do. So this is the thing which makes us go. We are propelled by our desires. This desire is very strong in us. When you talk about desire, usually you talk about these sexual desires, but the desires there are six kinds of desire. Right? Desire for things which we see, desire for things which we smell, desire for things which we hear. No, what are the things which we desire for which we hear? Beautiful sounds, right? Either it's music is alright, music. Right? You listen to heavy metal or you listen to opera music. But sometimes we desire for something more pleasant than that. Beautiful words. You are a very handsome man, Jim. You are not old, Jim. And so on. So all these things. Huh? And when we have that, we want it. When somebody says you're a horrible person, what happens? Suffering. When people say I'm very nice, then I start to look in the mirror. I'm very nice, right? Next time somebody don't look at me, I say, how can you not look at me? Such a handsome person. Again, suffering. So all these things, you know, that's how we operate. That's how we work all the time. So it's from that mind and that body of ours. And this body of ours, we have got six things, right? Six, what you call, bases or six entries for things. The things which you see, the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, the body itself, and the brain. Right? So these are the things which we receive signals from. And when you start to receive signals from, then you note that some signals are pleasant and some signals are not so pleasant. So far, I've spoken to you about very pleasant signals, you know, this beautiful cup, I want it, and so on. But sometimes I say, the other way of suffering is I look at this cup. Possibly, Look at this cup. Not a really nice cup. Now, what happens after that? The possibility of me looking at, say, I don't like white. I like green. No, it's a simple cup. Then, how dare they serve tea to me in the green cup, in the white cup, when I like green? So, no, this is the way we operate. A small thing, you and I do the same thing. Then after that, I said, And the more I look at the cup, the more I hate it. So either I just smash the cup or tell Ellen, next time don't give me this blinking white cup anymore. I like green. So, there you are. Worries. And all these things. When I start to criticize, then I say, okay, this is not a good cup. When I go down to the lift, I say, perhaps I've spoken the wrong thing. I've insulted them. I go back to apologize to them. So all these things. And all because of one thing. I don't like white cups. I want green cups. So this is the thing which we do. These sort of things happen to you in different ways, many, many times a day. In fact, millions of times a day. Some of them you note because of the impact. Some of them you don't note because you just don't worry about them. The impact can be very small. The impact can be very big. And sometimes from very small impact, we make it into a big thing. I sit down and worry about things. Now, with the Asians, I always talk about ghosts. Because ghosts is a favorite of Asians. So, obviously, now this room is dark, and then only two of us sitting there. And then the door was shut, and we are doing our fiber computer, and the door suddenly went click, 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 open by itself. I know that a lot of Caucasian or people who are brought up in Australia don't worry about that. And they go and say, what's wrong with the door? But the Asian will sit down there and shiver. How many of you agree with me? There must be a ghost coming in. I was talking about ghosts last night to a group of Asians. They so believe in the ghost so much. Right? And so that we forget that to look into to investigate into what's happening. Actually, that sort of things, the memory, can cause us a lot of problems. Now, since I came into Buddhism, I know what this sort of things is. It's just the imagination, the workings of the mind. But yet, years ago, when I going to live in a very big house on a very big property, and it's full moon, and all the gum trees there, swaying and looking like ghosts, I was alone in that house. So in the middle of the night, I went to sleep in a small room. In the middle of the night, the window started to go rattling, bang, 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 bang. I got up, and bang, bang. Wow, must be a ghost. You see that? Even though I don't believe in ghosts, the first impression is a ghost. Then after that, I sat down there, I said, ghosts don't exist. So it makes me bold enough to go looking for things. I keep on banging. This is a very, very brave ghost. Like usually when you look at things, the ghost disappears. But this ghost still go there and bang on the window. So what I did, I went outside to see how big the ghost is. So I went out. Actually, there's no ghost. It was the wind blowing and knocking on the window. So all these things. But the first thing is our memories will make us recognize things as we want it to be. Right? So this is the way the mind works. So when you look at this cup, you might think this is a beautiful cup. I might think that this is not a beautiful cup. So because of the way I think. So this is, again, this is one, the cause of suffering. The way we think is because of the way we grab onto those ideas. I don't like white, I like green. So when I see anything white, that hatred comes up. So we got to look into it. Now that is where we come to the next practice of Buddhism. The Buddha says, if you get rid of attachment to things, then where is the suffering? So the formula goes, everybody goes for formula nowadays, isn't it? Even the economics go. That is, it's you plus attachment then it goes to suffering. You can see that, then you are seeing suffering. Okay? Now, what are these attachments about? To the things which we see, things we hear, things we smell, things we taste, then the things we feel in body, and then things which we think, right? Our thoughts and ideas. So this is the only six possible things which you can get attached to. If you can think of a seventh or eighth or ninth, then you're clever than a Buddha. Now, as I told you before, how we attach a thing to we see. If I like white, I'm attached to it. If I don't like white, I'm still attached to it. No way out. When you don't like it, you're still attached to it. And it takes a person with great skill to be able to shake off that attachment. Right. So you attach to the thing we see, attach to the things we hear. When people say pleasant thing, we are attached to it. Right. Comes back, now, Jim, you are very good looking. Okay, when I walk home, I'm so happy. And Jim, you're so ugly. What happens? Grumble, grumble. Go around, go home and kick my cat. So, things you smell, of course, you guys know. If somebody let off a horrible smell inside here, what? It's just a smell. Why do we get upset with it? It's because we put a value to it, right? That's my value, my thinking. In Buddhism, we say I, my, and mine. Right? These things, the things, which gives you that idea. It's my idea. Right? Sometimes, for things I smell, sometimes I think a flower smells very nice. I pick the flower and give to a friend, say, have a whiff of it, it's so nice. The other smell is a yuck. It's just because he doesn't like the smell. So, this attachment, again, to the taste. I don't have to tell you, there are many types of food which you like and many food which you don't like. When you're given food you don't like, what happens? When you're given food which you like, what happens? In both cases, there's attachment to it. The food which you like, gobble, gobble, then ask for some more. Then think of it afterwards. And then when you don't get the food, you get so disappointed. Food which you don't like, you just get upset with it. Eat it, you force yourself to eat it because there's no other food. Otherwise, you go hungry. So, these are things. And then the sensation in the body, the bodily sensation. We would like to have pleasant sensation. You come in a room, if it's over, say, 35 degrees, what happens? You're sweating there, and can somebody switch on the aircon? What? The aircon is gone? And there you are. Suffering. So, this attachment, and the worst is attachment to the way we think. The way we think is these ideas which we develop in ourselves. I think this is nice, I think this is not nice, I got this opinion, that opinion. And then even when we are hearing, listening to somebody talking, we are still attaching to our own opinion. He's right this time, it's wrong this time, I must tell him he's wrong. See, all the time we are doing that. So it takes away our attention. And after that, it gives us a lot of thoughts, which makes us really feel horrible. His opinion is wrong. I must go and write in the university newsletter to say that no, so and so has made the wrong opinion, and so on and so forth. But when you say that, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. And especially when you say it, when we are fully attached to it, when we are really in a state of anger and all these things, nothing works. You want to complain of about anything, it's not that we don't complain. Buddhists are not stupid. When something really wrong is done to us, we complain. But try not to complain with anger. When your mind is really angry, you complain. People don't really, you wouldn't never get a satisfaction. So it's good that when we get rid of this anger. And to get rid of this anger, to not be less upset, is to learn how to get rid of this attachment. So how to get rid of this attachment? Well, you can sit down there, attachment go away, attachment go away. Right? It doesn't work. The more you say it goes away, the more it comes and haunts you. So what you can do is, that's where the practice of Buddhism comes in. Right? Be able to be aware of this attachment first. How can we be aware of this attachment? Simple. The Buddha says, develop this thing called mindfulness. Be mindful of things. Of course, you guys know about mindfulness. That you're mindful that there's a big bus coming in front of you so that you don't walk there and get killed. Right? That is ordinary mindfulness. But in the what the Buddha talk about, this mindfulness, is this mindfulness about this attachment and where it comes from. And this mindfulness brings you to the state of awareness. And we are aware of things, then you are clear about your thinking. We are always on autopilot. You wake up in the morning, you just go, okay, I'm going to lecture. Okay, go to lecture, sit down there, open your thing, do whatever you got to do. And we are just working on a routine. But it's not often that we develop this real mindfulness. And if you go into the Buddhist scripture, the Buddha spent a lot of time talking about developing this mindfulness. It can be mindfulness of what we see, we hear, and so on. Mindfulness of how our bases, all these organs are working, so that we are aware of what's happening at any time. Now, it's not that we don't have mindfulness. Sometimes we are mindful when we are angry. Somebody says something and we really get really angry and say something back. Okay? We are mindful of that. They may say, maybe I shouldn't have said that. Or maybe we think of, we know that you have said that. That idiot, what do you call that, deserves all these things. You are mindful of it. But you are creating all these situations. But in the Buddha's way of looking at this, is just be mindful of when it's coming up. At a stage, things like being angry is not a spontaneous thing. Don't think that I see something I don't like and I get angry. No. It's something I don't like. I don't like the thing. I see the thing, get in contact with it, then I recognize the thing first, then I make up my mind whether I should like it or not. That's how we work. And this mindfulness is to develop the ability to go into all these things. So, that particular practice we are talking about will be what we call Buddhist meditation. There are many, many different forms of meditation. Like the one I started with you, it may not be 100% Buddhist, right? But it's a very good meditation to calm yourself down. Right? If you are in a state of stress and all these things and you find that you are already in a knot, then you sit down there, just breathe in and breathe out, and feel the calmness. In other words, you're creating an artificial situation. But it is not the ultimate thing to go in meditation. Because it just gives you the beautiful sensation, calmness. And then when you're out of meditation, your mind is more calm and stable, then you can face that stress which is coming to you. What we are talking about Buddhist meditation is to develop what we call mindfulness. And the Buddha has got a couple of, or three or four of those very long discourses dealing with that. It teaches you from the very beginning, what shall you do? So in that mindfulness meditation, we train ourselves to be aware of what we call the body. Of course, it's one you deal with in your meditation training, the body, through our breathing. You just breathe in and out. And this time you don't say, I'm relaxing. Just breathe in and know that you're breathing in, breathing out. And in doing so, you're starting to develop this a sort of stability of mind, that developing some concentration. And but while you're trying to do that, there'll be a lot of distraction coming in. try that. You breathe in and out. Later on, when you go back and try it, you breathe in and out. Just be aware of the breathing. What's going to happen is you're going to have a lot of thoughts. You're going to be affected by sounds. You sit down in your flat or in your room trying to be mindful what happens. Somebody will walk past. Somebody downstairs or your neighbor would turn on the radio very loud or whatever. But sounds there. So to be mindful means to be mindful of the sound, to be mindful that your attention has gone away. And we've got to learn how to bring your attention back. So this is the way the body, to train ourselves, to be mindful of the breathing, then to be mindful of the postures and so on. And from there, we go into the feelings, right, or the sensations. Understand the sensation when you, later on when you know the sensation of your sitting, are you comfortable or not? Are you uncomfortable or not? Then sometimes the thoughts will come out. When thoughts come out, they're just barely, just a thought. And that thought will affect us. So you know, this thought, I'm having a nice feeling about it. This thought coming, I'm having a unpleasant feeling about it. So just monitor the thoughts. And we can't do it unless we have got a bit of stability in our mind. You've got to be a bit, feeling a bit more calm, a bit more concentrated in our thinking. So, from there we go into the states of the mind. Whether we have got strong liking or strong disliking, desires and so on. Whether our mind is calm, our mind is peaceful and so on and so forth. Then we go into other things, right? In the case we call it the objects of the mind. It goes into our thing like anger, our fears, worries, disappointments and all these things. And our strong desire, the wanting of things. Now when you sit down in doing our meditation, we can never be free of thoughts. But human beings are a thinking animal. You get thoughts all the time. If you stop thinking, you're dead. The way we practice is to be aware of those thoughts coming up and know what it is without getting ourselves embroiled in the thinking. So from there, you go and start to look whether I'm restless, whether I've got strong desire, whether I've got these doubts and so on. And then sometimes you can look in the positive things in the mind. Now whatever I've spoken just now are all negative in the minds. But there are a lot of things which are positive in us. The ability to feel kindness, the ability to feel compassion, the ability to appreciate other people and so on. The ability to have a very level mind. So this, again, this will be topics of future talks you might have. Right? About what we call the four noble states of mind. So, as you look at it, the Buddha explained all these things very well. That teaching us from our suffering, going into the next state, to investigate into where this suffering starts from. Right? And from there, then only we do something. Just simply push the suffering away and say, I don't suffer, when it comes back to you, will be terrible. Right? Trying not to know anything about it, and we just live in a state of, like a robotic state, as you say, just go there and every day we bang ourselves into a wall and we just say, okay, I bang my wall and maybe it's my fate and so on. The Buddha didn't say that it's your fate. The Buddha didn't say that it's somebody, from higher up trying to make you suffer. It's you yourself. And you yourself, that's how you get yourself into the state of suffering, through your attachment. We grab onto this, we grab onto that. We grab onto things which are nice, and we grab onto the things which are not nice at all. And that's why we get into the state like what we are now. If you are really happy, you wouldn't even be thinking of investigating into Buddhism. And if you are really happy, then there's nothing for you to desire in this world. But why we have all these things which we want? It's because we are not really happy. And when we are not really happy, we are in the state of suffering. So the teaching of Buddha is to teach us how to get out of suffering. And to end suffering, you better learn what suffering is all about. Otherwise, you will never, never end your suffering. And when you start to know suffering, you're aware of the suffering coming into you. Then we can start to do something about it. And doing something about it is a big thing, whole life thing. The way we conduct our life, both in a physical way and in a mental way. So the way the Buddha talked about ending suffering is actually based on mindfulness. But there are other things. Through mindfulness, we can develop what we call a way of life. We got to live with other people. We got to live with ourselves. And sometimes, you know, we always think that other people should be nice to me. Have you ever think that we should be nice to other people? No. So, two ways. If you are kind to other people and genuinely kind, then I don't think other people will be nasty to us. If you know that if other people happen to be really nasty to us, if we start to look at it, just be aware, be mindful of it, you find that it's because of our own reaction that people become nasty. If we don't want to accept nastiness, nobody can force the nastiness in you. See, for example, why somebody always insults me? In actual fact, that insult comes because we interpret it as an insult. If I walk around the street and somebody yells, "Bop, bop, bop," or something, if I know the language, if it's really, you know, and to be a swear word or something swearing at me, then what happens? I get upset. How can he swear at me? And if he's smaller than me, I turn back. What did you say? Take that. He's bigger than me, I grumble and go home and kick my cat. But if you follow the teachings of Buddha, there's no way. It's just somebody says something. Supposing if he says in a language which I don't know and I don't see him, I say, okay, you know, I don't quite understand you, so I walk away. So it's just our reaction to it. And when you react to it, you want to accept it or when to reject it. And usually we do both. We accept and then we reject. Once you accept it, you can't reject anymore because it's stuck in your mind. When somebody swears at me, I accept the swearing. Then it's stuck here, I can't reject it. Now, the Buddha's teaching is about trying. When you accept it, you are able to let go of it. So, the next word after attachment is
simple words.
Learn how to let go. If the more you refuse to let go, the more suffering we get. So, we let go of the things which are not of any importance. So it's very, very important that we are able to look into it and see the thing. And that is precisely what the Buddha encourages us to do, to see things as they really are. Now, for those of you who have read Buddhist book, let the hurt be hurt, let the sight be seen, that's all. Look at things, no, I've seen it. And just look at this, it's a cup, finish. If I look at it, it's a white cup. There'll be things happening. So, when I look at it, it's a cup. And I look at it, tea inside there. I love tea. There you are. I got no problem. Even though it's in a white cup, I see tea. So I see the goodness in the tea. But again, if I prefer to have Earl Grey tea, and you give me some Chinese oolong, I don't like Chinese tea. There you are. Start the whole round of suffering again. So it's very much up to ourselves. Nobody imposed that on me. If they brew some tea with me, if I don't like it, I don't have to drink it. Finish. But why should I get attached to it and say, these people don't respect me? How can I, a great Buddhist teacher, you don't respect me giving me the tea I don't like? Come to think of it, they keep walking. Then when by the time I reach the next traffic light, I'll be work out in such a mood that somebody who cuts in front of me, I get really upset, I chase after him, I get into a crash. Yeah. And all because of one really simple thing that somebody put oolong tea in the cup for me. You see, that's how we work ourselves into that sort of situation. To avoid that, we must learn. This is a process of learning. And it's a very simple way of learning, learning how to let go. So you find that in your mindfulness meditation, the letting go is important. Look at the attachment and start to let go. So you want to talk about ending suffering, then you guys jolly well learn how to let go. No letting go, no end of suffering. It's because you are so attached to it. If your partner, your lover, or your boyfriend or girlfriend has left you, they're gone. But we still don't let go of the person. Right? So that's why you're suffering, if you happen to be in this situation. So learn how to let go. Not let go physically, but let go mentally. So, any questions so far? Every time I give talk about letting go, people say, but it's so difficult. Is that the popular consensus among you that it's very difficult to let go? You know why? Human nature. Otherwise, you wouldn't be a human being. So everybody is the same. You and I, we are all in the same boat. Right? And this going in the same boat, you know, keeping going round and round, is what we call living in the sea of suffering. Samsara, as we call it. Right? Keep on going round. Today we get upset, tomorrow we get upset over the same thing. Day after tomorrow, you might be happy. The day after that, we again go round and round. In fact, a lot of times, the same thing makes us upset. But if you are able to be mindful of the thing, being see through the thing, and learn to know that this sort of things upsets me, what am I going to do about it? We always think that to be upset is good, it's my nature, it's my character. But sometimes our own character needs a bit of working on it. Yes?
I'm actually first time at this talk. Yeah.
Giving up attachment?
Yeah, just to like something or some person.
We are not talking about happiness here. Like, giving up attachment doesn't make you really happy. It makes you not suffering, that's all.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, supposing if I got a thorn on my skin, right? When I remove the thorn, I don't get a beautiful skin. So there's the whole idea about just removing a thorn take away the pain. So the idea is to take away the pain of life. Right? We keep on going every day, we torture ourselves with this sort of things. Right? So try to take it away. And actually, if you look at it, a life without attachment is a life of calmness. There are certain times when a lot of those people who do meditation regularly will experience. Right? And this time when you feel really calm, you are not quarreling with the world, you are not quarreling with yourself. So that is the sensation you get. You are not being happy. You know? After all, happiness doesn't last very long. And in the case of the Buddha's teaching, we are not actually after happiness. Of course, happiness is better than sadness. Right? But we are not actually after this so-called artificial happiness. And the real calmness is time when you really feel that I got no problems with the world. I got no problems with myself. And that is really that what we will call, you know, the sort of bliss, the joy which you get. It's not happiness like when you get the $2,000. When you get $2,000, what are you going to do? Happy, right? After that, you think, where am I going to keep the $2,000? People might steal my money away. There you are, your happiness is all gone. How am I going to spend the $2,000? I'm going to spend this or that. Now you get more problems. Yeah. It's not that you shouldn't have that $2,000. It's just that when you have $2,000, you know, okay, somebody might steal the money. But what happens if it is stealed tomorrow? I keep it in a nice place. When somebody steals it, well, that's all. So that is the way you get rid of attachment. It's not that we shouldn't enjoy ourselves. It's not that we shouldn't do any other things. The Buddha never stopped us from enjoying ourselves. But just be aware, where does this enjoyment lead you to? Right. Now, there's a story, you know, I like to tell too. It's just on Friday nights, a lot of people who work, and you guys may be exempted probably if you don't work. Those who work on Friday in Australia, our custom is, you know, you work very hard for the last 5 days, so Friday night we are going to enjoy ourselves. Right? So, some people will go home and then they have got a good shower, they can change, put on all the perfumes and whatever, antiperspirant and all this, they go to town, they can have a good night. So of course it's nice to have a good night. But the way we look at enjoying ourselves is what in this country? Go to the pub. Or the pub crawling, they call it. So they go one pub, two pubs, three pubs. They go there, one pub, you enjoy two drinks, three drinks, four drinks, five drinks. Until they're about dead drunk. And you're unlucky, you go to King's Cross, somebody, a king hit you, and the next day you either end up in heaven, hell, or hospital. Right? So, is it a good idea of enjoying your night? Now, even you don't, nobody gets king hit. You get a taxi and you go home. Next morning, Saturday, what happens when you wake up? There's a thing called hangover. You go there, you stick out the tongue here, see if you got so much sand in your tongue, right? And your flatmate just move the furniture a bit. Stop it, I get a headache. You're enjoying yourself, but that's a result of enjoyment. It's because we don't know how to enjoy ourselves. Right? So, now, after waking up and you get a horrible hangover, then what do you say? I never touch the stuff again. So, 11 o'clock, your friend says, tonight we are going such and such a pub. Oh yeah, I'll come. Could happen. Sunday morning, you get the same thing. Why? I got a friend, he should never got married. He's the kind of person who can never hold on to a wife. So when he wants to get married in the first place, I told him, don't get married. You're not that kind to get married. Oh, so I find the most attractive person. I swear that I love her all the time and all this. Sure enough, after one kid, he goes out and get other girlfriends. The wife found out, booted him out, kicked him out of the house. So he got no house. Then he started to work up again, you know. And then, what happens? Second wife. So I got a second wife. This time, he didn't ask me, but I volunteered my opinion. I said, you've made a mistake the first time. This is the second time you're going to get married. Think over. I don't know, Jim. This is a perfect woman for me. Guess what? After another 5 years, found another girl, got kicked out again, and started the whole thing again. So we never learn. Now, this is exactly what the Buddha says about our human characteristic. Like, no, we keep on falling into the hole and we like falling into the holes and injure ourselves. If you look into many people's life, that's what happens. And the reason why, because they're not clear about things, they're not mindful. They give way to the desires, they give way to all those things. Not just only on having wives, but desire for other things. That desire for having a good night out and getting yourself drunk. That is the whole thing. But if you are mindful, you just look into the life and regulate your life a bit more. The Buddha didn't say, oh, you must not do this, you must not do that. Just do it and just be aware of any benefits or any harm that comes into you. In the teachings of Buddha, there's no such thing as good or bad. It's about benefits. What benefits you and others, do a lot more. What harms you and others, don't do it at all. Simple. But very often, we do all those things. It's because we have got this, what the Buddhists call ignorance. Ignorance about the consequences of our action. Ignorance about the nature of things and so on. In other words, in the case of no wisdom, that's what happens. And you look at this training, this mindfulness will eventually lead us to a state of wisdom, which means we can be clear about things. Know that if I do this, this is going to happen. I know that's going to happen. And that is understanding karma. People talk about karma as if it's you know, some judgmental thing. But karma is just whatever you do, you get the results. And you know that if I do this, I'm going to get that. If you practice. No practice, well, we just do and expect the best. Okay, any other questions? Yes.
Okay. Regarding attachment, I have a quick question in terms of romantic relationship. So especially in this society where we call, you know, romantic relationship, the idea of romance by itself, or, you know, like when I think about it, romance, like when people, especially in, you know, in a couple or partner relationship, people tend to seek a relationship for so-called romance, intimacy, affection. Some people seek it for sex. But so all of that is considered as attachment, and eventually, according to what you say, it will give you suffering. But then when I think really hard about it, isn't it a part of evolution? I mean, human beings need the sort of thing to, you know, to move on, to give birth. So really, you know how people say romance and love, like what the media consider as love, is that just something artificial that people, you know, we make it up?
I think you're right in the last statement, because nowadays when you talk about this romantic relationship, what do we look at? What model do we get? Well, we get our model from the movies. We get a model from who's that old lady? Barbara Cartland, I think. She writes, you know, novels are anything. Every 2 hours, she produces one new book on romance. And also, from the lives of a lot of those so-called famous celebrities. Right? But you look at them, how long do their relationships last? Right? They say, oh, I love my wife so much, or I love my husband so much. It's uncheckable and all these things. 5 years later, they say goodbye to each other, split the fortune up, then the son goes to one side, the daughter goes to the other side. Right? Now, that is reality. If we base our relationship on that kind of so-called romance and the kind of love, right? But there are other kinds of love and other kinds of romance you can have. It's not one that is fully attached. You're going to know that the other person is another person. Now, what you talk about is so-called love and romantic relationship is a bondage. That if I get hitched to a partner, I must bond the partner to me. Right? Now, if I love you 5 units, you love me, I want 10 units of love back from you. Otherwise, you don't love me. Ah, that is the whole thing. Right? So, if you can look into that and say, okay, you got a partnership, there's a love there, but just be reasonable. Then you find that the relationship lasts forever, until you die. But if you look at a Hollywood romance, that's the best example you can get. About 80% of them end in separation later on. Right. So, are we going to follow that? Or are we going to follow this?
But fundamentally speaking, do you think that that romantic relationship, you know, so-called romantic relationship, is dysfunctional? Because I understand what you say, that you need to be reasonable, like, you know, 5 minutes, 5 minutes back. But then fundamentally, there's some attachment right there.
It is functionable only when there's strong desire. When the desire is no longer there, it's finished. Whereas you get the other relationship which is not based on very strong desire. Even though the desire is not there, you can still have a functional relationship. I've seen relationships who are like that, in the old, so-called the old-fashioned and the new kind of relationship. In a fairly older kind of relationship, whether you're in the West or in the East, they are not so much based on that sort of fierce love and all these things. No, I remember attending weddings 40 years ago. I never see people going to go and say, oh, that's my I declare my love for my wife, and then the wife declared the love for the husband in public. So, you find that those days, people are more able to accept things which are, when things go wrong. When the other person is not so nice, okay, I accept you. Since I'm married to you, I may as well put up with you. Sort of things. But now, this is not no longer that. I can't bear you out, you go. or I'm going to see somebody else. So this is the way. Yes?
Before I came to this talk, I would have said the opposite of suffering is happiness.
Uh-huh.
But you were saying through unattaching yourself to, I guess, these mental objects, you seek wisdom. Mm. So would you say the opposite of suffering is wisdom?
When a person has got wisdom, then there will be significant reduction in their suffering. Because you are able to understand the truth and be able to avoid a lot of these shortcomings. Now, when you know that there's a hole in front of you, if you are not aware of it, just keep on falling into the hole. Now with a bit of wisdom, you can see there's a hole in front of me. What I'm going to do? I walk around the hole or just don't walk into the hole. No, that's the analogy of it. So it's you find that in the Buddha's teaching, it's all about developing wisdom. Now, wisdom is not something which is really fantastic. It's just the ability to look at things clearly. Know that, for example, this cup. I know that when I see this cup, I start to develop the hatred for it. If I got the wisdom, I can see that this is my hatred for it. So, nothing, then I get not attached to it. Then, although I see the cup, I drink from the cup, I don't get affected by the cup. You get my point? So that is the skill which we need to develop to get out of suffering. If I keep on to my usual, normal way of thinking, then every time somebody give me a white cup, I really get upset. Right? Any other questions? Yes?
So, mindfulness and awareness and letting go of desires and non-attachment, aren't these desires and attachments in themselves?
It works like a cycle. Desire, attachment. Attachment, desire. It gets worse and worse. Right? It's all in the working of the mind. This one is just a cup. Because I get attached to it, so I desire it, a green cup. If it's a white cup, then I don't like it. You give me a green cup, then the other things will happen. Whatever way, what they say here is, if it happens this way, I'm wrong. If it happens that way, I'm wrong. That is suffering. So we sometimes don't have the choice.
I understand that, but I'm just saying, trying to not desire. Isn't that also a desire?
You can say that if you have a very strong wanting to and you get upset if you don't. But if you allow the normal way to happen and just say, okay, I'll train myself slowly. Now, that's where a lot of people who try to practice in Buddhism gets into trouble too. I want to change myself tomorrow. Right? So go and look for a very great teacher. I sit with a teacher and say, okay, teach me everything you know. It doesn't work that way. You got to do it yourself. Right? The DIY in Buddhism is very, very big. So, where to start? Then you have to be mindful. And then gradually, just polish yourself. It's just like you get a rusty iron ball. Right? It's full of rust. What do? If you use a chisel to chisel it, you crack the ball. So what you do is get a brush and brush it. The more you brush, the sooner the rust goes away. So we are so full of rust, so we got to do our practice. And the practice is fairly constant. A lot of people, again, they make mistakes by saying, okay, I go and meditate once a year up in Blue Mountains, and hopefully all my attachment will go away. It's not true. When they come back, they get more attached. Actually, they're attached to the silence up there. So, what we got to do is give ourselves time, learn how to do it, and after that, bring the what you have learned, the experience you have learned into your life. When you're sitting down there, when the thought of anger comes out, you learn how to deal with it. Now, that is a skill you start to develop. Then when you go out, you suddenly get angry, maybe the skill you develop will help you to resolve that anger. So it's a slow thing. Now you're talking about desire. when we have got a strong desire to get rid of our desire and try to do something about it, it doesn't work. The Buddha never said that it works. But you got to have the ability to start somewhere, look at it, and then learn how to be non-attached with things. Now, usually in mindfulness meditation, we teach people how to be, to take away attachment. Just now in your meditation, I didn't ask you to get rid of your attachment to sounds or to thoughts. But in mindfulness meditation, we always do that. You sit down there, and then when you hear something, know that you're hearing and bring your attention back. And that is the starting of learning how to be not attached to the thing. Did I answer your question all right? No? Sort of. Sometimes when you are too, what's the word? You want to do everything in one go. It doesn't work either. Right? Now, in one of the discourses of the Buddha, he told this guy, he says, no, look, it's just like tuning a guitar string, a lute. Right? If the string is too tight, and you tune it very, very tight, it snaps. When it's not tight enough, when it's too loose, it doesn't make good sound. So we got to find the middle way. So when we need to have the desire to get rid of desire, don't be too tight about it. Don't be too loose about it. Okay? Any other questions? Yes?
You said that there's no idea about like good and bad, and that we shouldn't ever harm others or ourselves, but like, is there an idea about what is right? And like, what about if like perhaps you kind of need to harm in order to benefit like for a greater number of people or something like that? So like, for example, if you're actively campaigning about an issue, and inevitably there are going to be people who will feel hurt, but then like you...
Oh yeah, we know injustice, we know. Right? Mm-hmm. If you feel that there's really injustice, either to ourselves or somebody, it's best to address the injustice, not through our strong desire and all these things, right? Or through, especially through violence. It doesn't work. You look at now, what's all this war and this refugees about? It's about violence coming with violence. And you look, you go in the history of Indian Buddhism, of India, right, the recent history. Gandhi, the father of Indian independence, didn't really advocate violence. And he got independence for the country with less killing. So this is the way. Now, what I said just now, when you are angry, we tend not to think properly. Right, we tend to be... to act according to our own instinct. And our own instincts are not really that good. But if we are able to have a more stable mind, we are mindful of our actions, mindful of the consequences of our actions, then perhaps we'll act a lot better. Yes?
What are the cases with insect? Because last time my house used to be infested in cockroach. Am I really all afraid of cockroach? But, like, I need to kill it for that?
I hate to say this, but sometimes, you know, the Buddha didn't make a rule to say you shouldn't kill cockroaches. But the Buddha didn't also say that you must kill cockroaches. So the whole thing is, it's a very, you got to determine for yourself. So, as you develop the wisdom, you can decide whether you are going to kill it or not.
But the thing is, if I don't kill it, they just keep on breeding. It's like, it's so bad.
So, if you feel that way, I hate to say that, kill the cockroach. But, when you start to develop the wisdom, you see, now, am I going to coexist with the cockroach or not?
But I try to kill it, like, as little as possible. I find the house and I kill all the worms.
Anybody who tried to kill a cockroach will know that there's a lot of suffering killing a cockroach. No, I can't give you a definite answer, but I can give you a story. We got a Thai temple up in Lumiere, in Campbelltown. And the caretaker is very, very religious person. He takes care of the place, but he's very religious. Unfortunately, a lot of our people, you know, they tend to use the kitchen, and then after that, they leave food scraps around. And after leaving food scraps around for 2 years, you find that the cockroach will come everywhere, in the pantry, in the place where they put all the crockeries and plates and all this. So, one time my family went there with my sister, right? And she's petrified about cockroaches. She's so scared about cockroaches. So she went there, we want to offer food to the monks. So we got to put things in plates and bowls. She opened up the cupboard, and the cockroach came out. And there are about hundreds of them. Not I would say millions, but hundreds of them. And then she screamed that loudly. Then the poor guy, in the caretaker, was in the garden, could hear her screaming. And then he came running around. So he said, Don't worry. I'll wash the plates for you to use. He rather wash the plates than to kill the cockroaches. And I can't convince him to kill the cockroaches. So, this is a story. You make up your mind. Now, that is the beauty I find about Buddhism. I'm never told to do anything at all. It's right or wrong. My monks never insisted I should keep away from this or that. But he gave me a lot of teachings. Then when I start to learn all these things, develop my own way of thinking, I find that I tend to go more towards the teachings in the scripture, the way in the scripture. Right? So in other words, you don't find the Buddha dictating to us about what to do. He gives us guidelines, you know. The five precepts is a guideline. And not to kill, not to steal, and all these things. Some people make a very big thing out of everything. But you can see, it's up to you to develop that thing. That whether you follow it or not, it's up to you to develop it. And of course, there are some other people who come after that and say, if you do this, then you're going to hell, this hell. You do that, you're going to that hell. Right? You want to believe them, you go ahead. Right? But sometimes when you see, to me personally, when I kill a cockroach, I know that I'm getting very upset with the cockroach. And that itself is suffering already before I kill the cockroach.
I don't get upset.
You don't get upset while you kill it. If you are not really upset, you wouldn't be killing it, would you?
No, I'm upset with the cockroach, but after I kill it, then I'm not upset.
Yeah, but at the time when you are upset. So the thing is, it's not that you should or you shouldn't. Right? It depends on your training. As you train more and more, you find that, what am I going to do? You can decide for yourself. Right? And that's beautiful. The beautiful thing about precepts. It tells you, not to kill, okay. Then you think about cockroaches, you think of mosquitoes and so on. Right? So there's another story. One day, this monk was supervising these meditation people in Thailand. In Thailand, there are a lot of mosquitoes. So he walked up and down, and all of a sudden he, somebody did it. Then he walked past the guy and says, "Your blood is very expensive." Oh no, some people's blood is very expensive. Then the guy, out of guilt, he opened his eyes and said, "You mean me, Bate?" He said, "Yes, your blood is very expensive." He said, "Why do you say that?" He says, "Just one drop of your blood, the play pay for his life." So eventually you develop one thing. Right? Sometimes I see a mosquito biting me, I just look. Then the fella gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and then it gets red. After it flies away, then I just donated one drop of blood to the mosquito. So I mean, it's up to you. If I don't like it, I kill the mosquito.
What is stinky mosquito?
The one we are just bringing it a bit one step further. If I live in dengue area, it'd be a different thing.
In Malaysia, no, it's 7,000 people.
Yeah, I know.
But so do you kill it or
they do that. Well, it's part and parcel of the thing. We can't say yes or we can't say no. When it's threatening somebody's life, then possibly they have got to do it. They've got to do it, they've got to do it. But we don't pretend that we haven't killed. Right? Or justify the killing and say, okay, I killed because... It's just because everybody who does all these things and kill because, then you get wars. I kill the Muslim because they cause so much problem. They are terrorists. I kill them. There you are. So, as we develop your wisdom, you can start to have an idea what to do. Right? It's not that nobody should kill cockroaches, nobody should kill mosquitoes. It's just that as you develop your wisdom, you can say, okay, I don't want to kill this, I try to tolerate this. I know people who kill spiders whenever they see a spider. Especially the Asians, you know, they hate spiders. But what does a spider do? Again, you know, it's because you're hatred for the spider. All right, any other questions? Yes?
Okay, so like recently, you know, since like I became a Buddhist, I've been like trying like so hard not to like have any attachment. I feel like I went from like being like overwhelmingly like attracted to people to just like being like aromantic, like at all. Like I see people, I'm like, oh, cool people, I like people, but like, whatever, like, I feel like, I probably like never should have like a relationship, I like never want to get married, because like, I don't want to have attachment. Do you feel like love is possible, like, if two people truly, like, genuinely do not experience attachment? Or is that just a myth? Is that just like a Hollywood story that's just so beautiful? Do you feel like real love is possible, like, in a romantic way that's like monogamous and like, special that...
Well, if we like people too much, we are still attached to them. It's not about liking people or disliking people. It's not that when you are not attached to them, you should like them or you dislike them. You just treat them like just human beings. Like, be friendly.
Can I just say something on top of that? My question is essentially the same as her question as well. But the more I think about it, I think, okay, it sounds really horrible, but I think people come to each other by the law of nature, it's only for sex, to give birth to later generation, and that's about it. Because if there's attachment, if there's, you know, so-called love there, then there should be some, you know, suffering. So eventually, I think it's only for sex. I mean, I don't think it that way, but the more I think about it,
No, I think we should go into.
It's almost saying that, but
someday then I learned to bring that. Let somebody talk a bit about the love in Buddhism. It's called loving kindness. We call loving kindness. There's a love in Buddhism, which is called loving kindness, right? Metta. Get somebody to talk about metta. Okay.
I would just say on that. I mean, I have a lot of friends who I am not attached to. I don't desire. And you can have friendship without attachment. So surely friendship plus sex equals a romantic relationship in that way. Without attachment. You don't need to have attachment to be...
But you're still attached to desire. So supposing you have friendship with sex, you're still attached to sex. There's still a desire there.
There's an act that's performed, but the act doesn't necessarily mean that there is an attachment that takes you to suffering.
Is sex suffering as well?
No, I'm not going to... You see, the thing is, it's very difficult to say. Depends on how it happens and what happens after that. It's just like that. No, I mean, the thing is, the Buddha didn't stop people like us were having sex, but he says, watch out whom you're having sex with. Now, if you're going to have sex with somebody's partner, then you got a problem. But if you have sex with your own partner, there's no problem.
But then if she's gone, then you're going
to
miss her.
Now, if you force the partner to have sex with you, there's a problem too. So, all the things your wisdom will tell you that it doesn't stop us from doing anything. But in the state of not having wisdom, then we don't have a choice. We follow our usual behavioral pattern. But when you have a choice, then you can say, I choose this because I won't have this consequence. I choose this because I can avoid the bad results and so on. Right? So, in other words, it's not that you must control yourself like through ignorance, but you control yourself through intelligence, through wisdom, through understanding. Right? So you go like, telling lies is a very common thing, right? In our society. Like somebody comes with an awful hairstyle and asks you, how do I look? You say, oh, very nice. But instead you say, you look like a witch. So that is the thing, right? Now, what wisdom will tell you what to do? For example, if you got some wisdom, then you say, the fellow look like a witch. Then she comes around, you say, how do I look? Then just keep quiet. Yes?
Okay, well, my question was, like, normally about sex. It's just more about, like, the attachment of, like, having another person in your life. Like, if you're truly 100% confident in, like, who you are, like, just comfortable with yourself, like, you have this, like, inner peace and happiness and no attachment, I feel like maybe you don't even need another person in your life to constantly, like, give, like, value to your life, to constantly, like, validate who you are, like, you know, to tell you that you're handsome and to, like, give your life meaning, because your life alone already has so much meaning and you have this no attachment thing going on. So in that sense, like, is love possible? Right now I just have this, like, very, very cynical idea of love that it's just, like, two people being lonely and desperate and, like, they just find each other to feel less lonely, less desperate. But, like, if you don't feel lonely and desperate, can you, like, reach that level where, like, does love still happen? Like, is it still, like, a real thing, or is it still
myth? No, you see, the whole thing is when you go into these sort of things, a lot of the times, you know, you just look at how the so-called romantic life or romantic love will happen, will lead you to. Right? So it is just a matter of being, develop ability to understand things. Now, when you develop understanding, then you can see. Usually, the Buddha is to lead us to be able to think properly. Think in a way, when I talk about properly, means think in a way to avoid a lot of situations which will bring us suffering later on. For example, now if I were to go and go after somebody's wife, I know that. I'm not going after somebody's wife. Why? It's going to be a lot of bad consequences. The husband will come and bash me someday. Right? Or the husband might even be worse. The husband say, you can take my wife. So, I mean, you got to see, just be things, see things that it doesn't really affect your life, right? Both physically and mentally. Now, what I've been saying all the time is, there's a lot of things which are bothering us all the time. But it's just being able to see that this attachment is causing all these things. So it doesn't mean that, oh, you've got to go and shave your head off and become a monk and things like that. You just develop ability to cut down all these things. Right? See what happens if you have got less desire for it. Now, if I've got a desire to have only Singaporean laksa, and somebody served me laksa with a Malaysian flavor, I said, no, that is crap. And get upset with it. Or you give me Indonesian laksa, I say, I don't go for all this rotten thing. There you are, I get a problem. But if I see this laksa as laksa, I really enjoy it. Whether it's Singaporean, whether it's Malaysian or whatever. Right? And better still, now, the next stage, if I see this laksa as food, I eat it just to keep my body going. It's nutritious enough, it's got all this bean shoots, it's got the carbohydrate, it's got all this protein. So much the better. Then I won't have a complaint with anybody when they serve me laksa. Right? This is the way we try to lead our life. You go to a place, what do you want to do when you sleep? There's a carpet, you can sleep on the carpet. But why people must say, I want a water bed or a queen bed or whatever? It's because we get that idea. After all, the place to sleep is when you can feel comfortable. Having a thin mattress, sleep on the floor, be all right. But no, I want to have a beautiful bed. So when wearing clothes, the same thing. You get those funny ideas about fashion and all these things. And then we start to say, I want this fashion. Put one sequin there, two buttons here, and so on. And think, oh, we're so pretty in that. Again, you're affected by other people's opinions and ideas. So if you can start to look at it, clothes mean something which is to cover our body, protect the body or whatever. So if you understand that, then you can get into any clothes. And if you further understanding, if you go around and people just look at you and, you know, make a funny statements and all these things, that's their opinion, even better. So as we go, you can understand this. And once you develop this understanding, then suffering gets less and less. We are reducing suffering and we are getting away from suffering. It's because we don't understand it. We get attached to clothes, we get attached to shoes. Right? The more I get attached to my shoes, I say, okay, I don't want to buy this $10 shoe from Kmart. I'm going to buy a $2,200 shoe from whatever. You see, I got to earn extra $190 to pay for that. They're suffering. Right? You look at this pair of shoes, well, you don't like it, too bad. Okay? Yes?
If we say that attachment to something is almost like an impulse, like we have attachment as a result of just being a human, is it possible that some attachment to things like, I won't say sexual relationships, but say the love I have for my mother, that is an attachment. And that attachment is necessary for the family to stay together. Are there some attachments that through wisdom you can comprehend as needed or necessary?
If ideally we should love our mother without attachment. Right? Now, the Buddha does not say that you shouldn't have any love. But the love without attachment is really beautiful. Right? Now, you love your mother, okay? Assuming. What happens if your mother dies tomorrow? You'll be in a wreck. But if you love your mother without attachment, you know that she died tomorrow.
So the goal is to, feel, but not to attach yourself.
When you see the attachment, when we talk about attachment, is at the loss of the thing. How do you feel? And that is suffering. Because we refuse to accept situation because of attachment. That's why when lovers separate, they get really upset. It's because they cannot accept the separation. They still attached to the memory of the partnership. Okay? So in the Buddhism, in the Buddhist teachings, we teach you to be able to see this sort of things. It's gone. Once a young man came and see me, and says the girlfriend just left him for somebody else. He's so upset and so on. I said, talking to him after that, he said, I feel like killing myself. We're quite normal with a lot of young people. They always want to kill themselves. So anyway, I told him, I said, would you kill yourself for love which is no longer there? And you look at it, this very lateral thinking in Buddhism. So if we are able to see that sort of things, then possibly, we can end our suffering. But we cannot end all our suffering yet. The more you do, when you start to work on it in the beginning, of course, in the end, you will be able to end your suffering if you want to. For most of us, we know, but we still want to work on it. Everybody, a lot of Buddhists know. I still know. I say I prefer scotch fillet rather than T-bone steaks. So at a good restaurant, I say, okay, give me a fillet steak or give me a porterhouse steak, whatever. I don't want T-bone steaks. And because I can see the thing. This is my attachment, my desire. But if supposing the person in the chef says, we have got no more scotch fillet or porterhouse steak, would you like a T-bone steak? I say, I'll have the T-bone steak. I still would enjoy my T-bone steak, but my preference is for the other two. Right? So, if I think like that, then where's the suffering? It's the way we learn how to look at things, how to accept things. Okay, I think Well, over my usual time.